Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right. Comes back to the left. Going long for Gordon. He's out there and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5. Touchdown!
Well, unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura.
We certainly hope you're staying warm on this Football Friday. The sun shines, but very deceptively.
Yeah.
Man, is it cold.
This isn't a California sun or an Arizona or a Florida sun. It is a deceptive sun. Sometimes I think it's colder when you don't have that cloud cover.
Oh, there's no doubt. I think that's what the Betsy Klings of the world tell us.
That's
right. You take that insulation off.
That's a nice shout out.
And it's colder. So anyhow, we're going to try to keep you as warm as we can, talking ball, talking Browns, for these next couple of hours. Good show today. Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network is going to be with us. He'll come aboard around 2:30. At 1:30, you're going to hear from Scott Petrak of the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram, get some thoughts on him as we plunge into off-season activity. Although, look, this is the fact. Teams are making moves. We're hearing things like the Baltimore Ravens signing Dennis Pitta, their tight end, who is going to hit the free agent market. Well, he's not. He's going to be a five-year deal. Yeah, he's a richer man with a five-year deal. A lot of activity going on, and things are relatively quiet for the Cleveland Browns, at least in the proactive sense. Yep, they released DeQuell Jackson, okay. But pretty much all the other news has been other teams signing players.
Yes, and I think to sum up the feelings of some Browns fans, just got a tweet literally as we went on the air from Brandon King, who tweets the show regularly at CharlieBlue47, says, okay, what are the Browns waiting for? Everybody else is re-signing their guys. Let's get in the game.
Yeah, and we want to see that step up, and we want to see what's going to happen with Alex Mack, want to see what's going to happen with T.J. Ward. I've been doing, as for the ClevelandBrowns.com website, a text version of what you and I have discussed, done on the air, which is rank the positions of need from, we went on a scale from 9 to 1. And I'm doing the same thing on the website, basically, and giving my thoughts with each one. And for the last, couple of days, I've had to address the positions of center and safety because who knows? I mean, as we sit here right now on February 28th, last day of this month, still nothing with either of those players. That doesn't necessarily mean they won't get done, but I'm not sure what the delay is. I think the effort is there from everything I've heard. The desire is there to get it done, but it takes two to tango.
It does take two to tango. Somebody's got to want to come here. There also is the franchise tag possibility for both of these guys. Ultimately, I think it would only make sense, though, to do it with T.J. Ward, given the salary implications of Alex Mack. But you're seeing teams be proactive, be aggressive, lock up their guys, and you want to see the Browns do that. And whether it be an Alex Mack or a T.J. Ward, or maybe saying, all right, here's the commitment to Joe Hayden, here's the commitment to Jabal Sheard, because those are guys that are out there, they're going to need to be locked up. You want to see something happen on that front, because what you're seeing right now with the Browns is obviously we had the release of DeQuell Jackson. Today, the report saying that maybe Ataba Rubin could be next. And now, to me, it depends on what kind of defense you're going to get here with Mike Pettine. If it's more 4-3, obviously he can play on the interior, can be a defensive tackle. If it's more 3-4, obviously plays defensive end in that format. But you've got Phil Taylor, you've got Desmond Bryant, and then two of the guys that I thought played phenomenally well last year, Billy Wynn and John Hughes. And you look at the situation with Ataba Rubin, and a lot of people on Twitter, the sense that I get right now is that they do not want Ataba Rubin to go. I don't know if people realize Ataba Rubin next year is due to make $8.175 million all told against the cap, which is the fourth richest salary on the Cleveland Browns. I don't know if people are aware of that, but that's what it is. If the team were to release him, they would save about $7 million in cap space. And when you look at the salaries, the combined salaries of John Hughes, who, let's not forget, was a third-round pick, and of Billy Winn, you're talking about a significant savings relative. Billy Winn, about $570,000 on the season. Hughes is in a similar ballpark. So financially, I understand it. I'd like to see, Hughes is at 706 with his prorated bonus. You'd like to see them work something out, but you have two guys who are making about, you know, $6.5 million less than Rubin, so you have to just weigh that. I'd like to see him stay. Great against the run, number 12 according to Pro Football Focus in getting against the run as a 3-4 defensive end, but he doesn't get to the passer at all. Second worst pass rush productivity among all defensive ends last year, so he is a solid starter, but he is someone who's replaceable, and Pro Football Focus actually did an interesting thing on their website, which I was reading through today, where they talks about the players on each team, where they have the janky value model, they call it, which tells you what they think a player's worth based on his production. And the interestingly enough, in the overvalued side, number two is DeQuell Jackson. We know he was released. Number three, they listed Ataba Rubin and also cited the fact that he doesn't get to the quarterback, but also they have Wynn and Hughes. I'd like to see something worked out, but that's something that's out there right now, Vic.
It's something that's out there in a logical way because of some of the various factors that you point to. The biggest is the financial. The biggest is that hit that will come about next year. So when you're proactive, you can be proactive in elimination as well as addition. And I think anticipating that is part of what the Browns could be thinking. But I do understand people who want to see Ataba Rubin remain a Brown. He's been a steady guy, kind of that quiet, steady force, but steady, and gets a lot of respect. I know Doug Deacon, when we talk with him at 2:30, will have nothing but great things to say about Ataba Rubin and would be very much against the idea of Rubin leaving the Browns. But I think it's important to look at the type of scheme that the Browns are playing, and it's hard to put an exact finger or identify exactly, is what I should say, what that scheme will be. Until we see it. Because the beauty of what Mike Pettine believes is that you tailor more of your scheme to the players versus as opposed to vice versa, which most other coaches or many others tend to do. He's found through his time in the league as an assistant coach, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that you can gain more production when you have players who are versatile and when you call certain defenses that just fit what their skills are, as opposed to saying, okay, look, this is the scheme, this is your assignment, and stay true to this. Now, discipline is an important part of that structure, but there are more opportunities for guys that you would say could play at linebacker inside or outside, given the particular down and distance, the circumstances, the opponent, what types of looks they like to have, what types of personnel they're going to match up with, so that you're always in a place where defensively you can kind of answer most of what the other team is doing. And this allowed him to have a very effective pass rush in Buffalo, especially last year. And it was a sea change for Buffalo's front because of what he did with Mario Williams and Kyle Williams and the various Marcel Hughes, Darius. Moving these guys in different spots and maximizing their production. And the same thing happened, you know, with the secondary. So I think players are going to like this scheme, but does it fit everybody? And is the body type of, say, an Ataba Rubin, who's really not a true anchor middle guy, but he can give you a penetration, doesn't give you that pass rushing effect, but you know he'll be solid, steady point of attack guy against the run. And that's, you know, that's important too. I don't think anybody has an ill feeling toward Ataba Rubin, the player. I've never heard, he's been part of multiple coaching staffs here, and they all give him high marks.
Yeah. Listen, I want Ataba Rubin to be a Cleveland Brown in 2014. I want Ataba Rubin to be on this team. I don't know that I want him to be the fourth highest paid player on this team because I don't know what his role is going to be. And going back and looking at Mike Pettine's defenses in New York and in Buffalo, on the defensive line and in the interior, he's okay with having one guy that doesn't really get to the quarterback, but rarely two. If you look at last year, Marcell Dareus, 7.5 sacks. Kyle Williams, 10 sacks. Mario Williams, 13 sacks. And then Jerry Hughes, who played a lot more on the line as an outside linebacker, had 9.5 sacks. So he likes his guys to get to the quarterback. That's not Ruben's strength. Phil Taylor, similar. That's not his strength either. It's clogging the middle, being very effective against the run. So I think that if you look at what Ataba Rubin is, just going off that, and this is all hypothetical, right, us, you know, speculating, and sure, until we hear it, we'll know differently, but there's a chance that Ataba Rubin in this defense could be more of a rotational player as opposed to a guy who's out there on every snap.
Right, and that is why when you look at Billy Winn, when you look at John Hughes, you're looking at really ideal guys for that type of role, interchangeable, move around, and just keep it rotating. And I, as much as he doesn't talk heavily about attacking in waves, he kind of keeps the same personnel out there, but you still want to have the ability, the depth, to move people in, obviously for the reasons of people getting hurt, but more importantly, just to keep people fresh. At some point, you sure need to give somebody a blow. At some point, Phil Taylor needs to come out, and you better be able to put in Ismaili Kitchen. And that's another name who I think of, a guy who fits what this team could do, both in terms of his physical talent and his contract. And that's going to be true with Wynn and Hughes. And the business model is part of this equation as well. When people hear all of this cap money, 40-odd or 50-odd million dollars of cap space, that will be, is or will be created as this team moves forward into the offseason or keeps moving into the offseason, the assumption is you're going to use it all. You're going to spend your way back up to fill that cap. That's not how this is going to work. You're going to be selective about who you add. You're going to identify your needs. And if anything, what I think this team will continue to do, and especially with a draft that has the rich talent that this one does, it's going to dip more heavily into that area and rely heavily on younger players to make an impact. And they're going to be more, not only are they going to be more cap affordable, but the feeling is on talent, you know, youth equals speed equals dynamic ability. And I think that's what will be the emphasis of this football team. I was thinking about this last night. With 10 picks right now, if nothing changes, honestly, this team has to come out of this draft with upwards of maybe 7 new starters out of the draft alone.
Sure. Sure.
That's, you know, and that's a lot of rookies in your starting lineup, but that is the way of the NFL. That is what's happening in this league.
Well, I think you're going to fill those gaps with some guys in free agency as well as some guys, obviously, through the draft. But, you know, back to your point, this team does have, if there is one spot that you feel good about the depth, it is up front, because you've got Wynn, you've got Hughes, who are currently on the bench. You've got Kitchen, as you talked about. And you Ataba Rubin's strength is his play against the run. He's a phenomenal player against the run. He's a wall. John Hughes last year was graded as the number 7 defensive end against the run. He could do very good there. Billy Winn had the second highest run stop percentage last year of any defensive lineman behind only J.J. Watt. And that means those are stops where you make the tackle near the line of scrimmage or behind it. So these guys can also play against the run very effectively. So in my opinion, you've got the ammunition there if need be. I think, again, Ataba Rubin, I'd love him to be on the team, especially if he fits in with what the coaches are trying to do. I just don't know that the allocation of resources that he's currently consuming is commensurate with the impact he can have on the field for this team based on the opportunity, the replacement costs that you have currently there, and also based on what you want to do going forward or in free agency with that money.
And let's keep in mind that he hasn't been coached by this group yet, and we don't know the specific ideas as they assess what they have in Ataba Rubin and other players, how they want to utilize him. And it's quite possible, Nate, that they're going to put him in a position where he could make more of an impact in the ways that you talk about rushing the passer,
right,
in this scheme.
Right.
This is how we want to put him here. Look at the difference. You could say, well, at a certain point, a player is what a player is.
But we saw the dramatic changes, even in a guy like, let's look at Mario Williams, and I'm not comparing his talent to Ataba's when it comes to explosiveness and edge rushing and getting to the quarterback, but he became a heck of a lot more effective in the Patton scheme in Buffalo last year than he was with anybody else prior to that.
For sure, but just when you look at Ruben, you have a little bit of an idea. The guy's basically been a full-time starter since 2009, and he's got 11 career sacks.
Yeah, that's not been –
that's
not
his forte. He's great against the run. That's what he's there to be.
Right, right. It hasn't been what he's been there to do. He's also – he was brought in primarily, you know, to be a guy who is a better fit in a 4-3 scheme than a 3-4.
I think we're going to see both. I think this is going to be a hybrid multiple front team that is going to be moving around all the time. And the flexibility, which I think is very key, is when you remember Jabal Sheard was drafted as a 4-3 DN. In college, Barkevius Mingo played hand on the ground 4-3 DN at LSU. We have the flexibility in our quote-unquote outside linebackers 4-3 DNs to kind of move back and forth seamlessly. This was a 4-3 team prior to last season. So there's a lot of flexibility in the personnel the Cleveland Browns currently have to go back and forth seamlessly in-game, which I think is exciting.
216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. We want to hear from you. Want those barks and growls from the dog pound. Also, you tweet us at Browns_daily, and we've got a bunch of tweets that we will also get into during the course of the show. A Football Friday is just getting started here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.